Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, gardeners. On a hot, hot day, let's go cool. What can you grow in the cool side of the garden, in the shady side of the garden, that will also give you colour? Well, there are two big performers, begonias and ferns, and would you believe both of them are on display today. The Begonia and Fern Society get together and they have their autumn show, and it's on today at the Community Hall, Klemzig Community Hall. Deb will give you more details about that later on, but we'll be talking very, very shortly to the Begonia champion Val Hendy, and in particular she's going to introduce you to a wonderful new type of a begonia. It's called a megawatt begonia, and we'll also take a look at cane begonias, in particular pruning them, getting them to prune correctly so that they give you the right number of flowers and keep on flowering right through the growing season.
Sounds wonderful. That's good news. Not so great news coming up in the program though, and that relates to fruit fly.
Sadly, fruit fly has been discovered here in Adelaide, and it's to the north of Adelaide, adjacent to our fruit growing and vegetable growing areas. Big problems ahead, maybe. It's important that they get ahead of it and can control it. We'll talk to Nick Seckham, who's in charge of PRRSA Plant Health, and he'll take a look at what the plan is to make sure that they can get on top of this very, very quickly.
Exactly. And I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away as well. And John, of course, is here to take your questions. So call in now if you've got a gardening question for John, a problem that he can help you nut out. The number is 1300 222 891. We'd love to get your comments on the text line. If you'd like to send something through, that is 0467 922 891.
Deb, one of my questions on Talkback Gardening is to find plants and advise gardeners of plants that will give you colour in the shade. And we mentioned two of the best performers would have to be begonias and ferns. And this morning we're going to focus on begonias, and we're going to talk with Val Hendy, who's one of the supporters of the Begonia Society. Anyway, let's say good morning to you, Val.
Good morning, John. It's great to be on the program.
Are you president of the Begonia Society still, Val?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Right. Oh, well, you've had so many of the positions there, Val, that I'm not too sure which one I should attach to you. That's why I call you the Begonia Champion. We'd like to talk to you about cane begonias, but before we do that, there's a relatively new type of a begonia called a megawatt begonia.
Yeah.
Could you tell us what a megawatt begonia?
Yeah. Well, a megawatt begonia has been around for a little while. It's part of the Semperflorum family, and if that doesn't mean anything, if you think of bedding begonias, and everybody knows those, they're old plants, and it's one of that family. So they're a plant that just flower non-stop all the time. But the megawatt is a very big one, and he's just beautiful. So that's what we've got for sale this morning, some of those.
Righto. So to look at one, I mean, if you can imagine sort of the little bedding begonias, it's like a bedding begonia on steroids.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, and so they would be maybe sort of 30, 40 centimetres tall when they're in their prime?
Yeah, they would grow about a metre high.
Sun or shade or both?
Yeah. Grow it in the shade.
Yeah, okay.
Don't put it out in the sun. You'll burn it if you put it out in the sun.
Yes, okay. And flowering, how long, and when does it flower and for how long?
It flowers forever. Once it starts to flower, it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And they're very rewarding plants. They have glossy leaves. The ones that we've got this morning have brown glossy leaves and pinkish magenta-coloured flowers, and they're just lovely.
Yes. Gardeners would be familiar with the colour brochures and the colour that they can provide in the sun, and probably there are mandevillas that are just brilliant in terms of the colour they can provide in the sun. And there has been a need for things that will be sort of be as good as the colour brochures and give you the colour that you're looking for, and the begonia megawatts must certainly be that kind of a plant.
Yes, they are.
Are they easy to propagate?
Well, we had a meeting back in November and we had a workshop and we planted the little plugs. Now, the plugs are about the size of my thumb and we planted them into pots and the members all took them home and they grew them. And we put three into a large pot and this is the result of what we've got to sell at the show today.
Oh, okay. So there'll be a rush on those, I suspect.
They've grown quickly and they've grown well and they're strong plants.
You mentioned you're growing them from little plugs. Where do you get the little plugs from?
From the nursery.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, so it's from a wholesale nursery.
Yes.
All right. Can you grow them from tip cuttings? I mean, with a cane begonia, we were talking the last time you were on Talkback Gardening about propagating cane begonias. And
Yes.
So could you describe how to propagate a megawatt begonia?
You could propagate from them. I have, but they don't die. You know, they go on for years, and they're similar to dragon wings. And most people know dragon wings, and they grow to be big, beautiful plants that flower non-stop.
Yes,
and just the same.
And many gardeners would be familiar with begonia big, and these are probably a step up from begonia big. And they take longer for the cuttings to strike. And if you take the tip cuttings and get a little bit of maturity there, they will strike, but you just need a bit of patience. So let's come back now to cane begonias. We were talking about cane begonias. Could you just describe why they are so popular amongst your members?
Oh, they're so popular because they're so reliable in the garden. And all summer they flower. They're just beautiful. They're old plants and they go on for years flowering. I've had one in my garden for 40 years and it's still flowering. It never stops flowering. Over winter they don't flower and that's their rest time. And then come spring they come alive again and flower.
So many people will buy a container and it'll have a cane begonia in it and it'll be in flower. Could you describe what happens to that over the next 12 months?
Well, it will continue to flower until about early winter and then it will go into its dormant type stage, but it's still a nice plant. It doesn't lose all its leaves. It will lose some, but it has a quiet time over winter, then comes spring, and early spring is the time when you prune them. So we prune them as well as we can then so that over summer we can just sit back and enjoy them. But if at any time a plant falls over and it breaks, then I give it a good prune, and I do that any time of the year that happens. So it's not impossible.
And those little pieces that you take off, you can strike those very, very readily, no doubt.
Yes, you can, but you take the top part of the cutting so that you're throwing away the bottom part because the bottom part won't make a good plant like the top will. So you pick one about 6-7 inches high and you make sure there's some growth buds on the side of it. I put about 4 cuttings into a pot and just sit them aside and they just start to grow and from there you've got a new plant. You can then divide those 4 into 4 separate plants or you can grow them as one big plant. It's up to you.
We've got a text question about begonias to drop on you, Val, if you don't mind, from Brad, who has sent in a couple of photographs and says that one of his begonias, which he's had for 25 years and has propagated it over and over, has turned silver. What's going on?
I'm not sure.
So we've got the green veins still in the leaves, but the rest of the leaf is completely washed out.
Sounds like he's got a bad attack of mites.
All begonias have a life. They're just like any other plant. And they'll be beautiful for years, but then you must always keep propagating more in case they die. But they don't usually die. You usually decide that it's past their time and they go in the compost bin and your new ones take over.
Yes, renewal. Coming back to a couple of the issues you mentioned, you said, okay, righto, it's towards the end of winter, you prune them back. Now, that's okay for you, Beval, and your members, but the people at home are saying, okay, well, look, I've got 4 or 5 are canes coming out of the ground, and they're all about the same size. Some are thicker than others. How do you prune?
Mostly I'd say I cut them down to about knee height. I look at the plant and I see what I want to have in front of me. So I cut it down to knee height and I cut all of them down to that height. But I leave it looking symmetrical so that it's good to start again.
When you're growing your cane begonias for a number of years, you'll find that some of the canes are old and some of them are new. Could you tell us how you get that balance, and particularly in terms of pruning?
It's a good idea to cut out the old canes and just leave the new ones. And it's a bit like roses, you know, delete the ones that have been there for too long and they're not as productive.
And would you cut those back at ground level or cut them back about...
Right back at ground level.
Okay.
And then just top it up with soil so it looks good.
And it'll send out new canes?
Yes, new canes. The ones that you've left will grow and take over.
All right. You've also mentioned when you're propagating that you take tip cuttings, but you've got to have little nodes down the side. Now, that's tremendously important because if you don't have those nodes, they won't grow. Could you just explain what those little nodes look like and why they're so important in terms of propagation?
Yeah, they're little growth buds on the side of the stem. And if your eyesight's not too good, you feel with your finger and you can feel a little point there, and that's the growth bud. And where the flower, where it has flowered, you usually don't get the growth bud. So you don't get it at every section. So it's very easy to tell, really. But some begonias have very long distances between the growth buds. And so you're not going to get so many canes coming up. So the more growth buds that you can see on the stem, the better it will be and the more you'll get out of that plant.
Right. Okay. And just one other area we just need to focus on a little bit is watering during this hot, hot weather. Okay, so we know it's going to be hot tomorrow, we water. But when we have got a heat wave, how would you look after your cane begonias and other begonias during a heat wave conditions?
Yeah. If they're dry, water them. Use your finger, feel the soil, and if it needs a drink, give it a drink.
Simple as that.
Yes, simple. Yeah.
Easy. What could be easier?
And it's hard to do. I've got a number of cane begonias and other begonias as well, and you look at them and you can see that they're being affected by the hot, hot weather. They're not as turgid as they would normally be. Then you think, oh, well, maybe it's time to water them. But if you put your finger into the potting mix, you'd find that, okay, the top centimetre is dry, but below that it's quite moist. And you're suggesting when that occurs, you don't water yet.
No. Not if you can feel moisture in the soil. The plant will be fine.
All right. Just give us a quick visual display of what we'll see at the show.
Ah, what you'll see. What a treat. We've got all types of begonias. And we've got, last show we had one table of special species tiny plants that grow in terrariums. This time we've got three tables. We've got lots of terrariums already set up and lots of little plants. We've got a huge number of other plants which are not species or they're not terrariums. So plenty of plants.
Wonderful.
Well,
it's all happening today, isn't it? The Begonia and Fern Show at the Clemsey Community Hall, Main Northeast Road in Clemsey, from 10 until 3 today. And Val Hendry, who is President of the Begonia Society of South Australia, and lots of your members will be there to provide expert information to people as they buy their begonias and ferns.
Yes, that's right. Behind the sales table, you've got the people who've grown the plants and know the plants, and they're the ones to talk to.
Brilliant. Well, as always, Val, we appreciate your time on Talkback Gardening this morning, and have a great show today.
Yes, and I might add that the hall is all air conditioned. It's cool in the hall, so be fine. Just come through the heat and get into the hall and you'll enjoy it.
Okay, and just before you go, a question on the text line says, are the cane begonias you've been talking about the same as tree begonias?
You could call them that.
Okay,
yes.
There you go. Thank you. Val, have a great show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Val Hendry, President of the Begonia Society of South Australia. We're going back to general talkback gardening right now, so call in. You'll get straight through to John Lamb. He's here waiting for your questions on 1300 222 891. That's 1300 222 891. If you've got the ABC Listen app, just make ABC Radio Adelaide your favourite, and with two taps of the app, you can get straight through. And I'm giving away a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines a little bit later in the program. And if we want to make a comment, we love your comments rather than your questions by the text line, which is 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Good morning. Talkback Gardening is what we're doing. Call in now with your question for John Lamb on 1300 222 891. 1300 222 891 is the number. And before 9 o'clock, if we get an opportunity, John, I might talk to you about things that we can plant after the heat wave is dissipated. Obviously, you're not going to be planting anything this weekend if you can possibly avoid it.
No, but it's a very, very important time of the year when, okay, summer passed and we now start to think about winter, but that's in between period and getting either the conditions right for planting, or else we'll list the type of things that maybe can be planted in the garden. And just coming to mind, I think bulbs, sweet peas, garlic, iris, all of those things. So we might come back to those if we have time.
Okay, great. Right now, let's go to Inman Valley. Barb is on the line with a milkwood bush question. Good morning, Barb.
Hello, Deb. Hey, John, how are you? I've bought a milkwood plant for the monarch butterfly caterpillars, and I had a dozen or so caterpillars on this nice little new plant, and it has no leaves left. Have I lost the plant, or will those leaves shoot back?
I think certainly from a plant's point of view, yeah, it'll survive. Had its leaves there. The interesting thing is how many of the little caterpillars will survive. Any of the larger caterpillars, you'll find that they will go into their overwintering stage, and so they'll find a little quiet spot and spin a little web around themselves, and they'll get themselves ready for coming out as a butterfly later on. You'll find that if there are small ones there and they run out of food, they'll probably get gobbled up by spiders and other things in the garden.
Right, okay.
But from the plant's point of view, okay, so it gets a bit of a setback, but that's okay. It's at the time of the year where it does a little bit of a reorganisation anyway. I would be suggesting that if you wanted to, after we get some cooler weather, and Darren Ray is suggesting that the back end of March should be much cooler than the first part of March. But coming back to your plants, I would suggest that when we do get some cooler weather, just take some of the older stems out, if you would care to, and give the plant a good organic fertilizer, and make sure it's not suffering in terms of moisture stress. But if you look after it, it'll start to re-establish its root system, send up new plants, and away it goes for next season.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, Barb. You sound very cheery on such a hot day. Lovely to hear from you. 1300 222 891 is the number. Rosie is in Aberfoyle Park with a native lime tree question. Welcome, Rosie.
Thank you. Hi, John. I have two fairly pot-bound native lime trees and would like to know when to replant.
I'd do it as soon as you possibly can after the hot weather.
Good.
They are presumably from the more warmer climates, and they are used to a warmer climate. Just be careful with the root system. You say it's been in the container for a while?
Yes, I've been there for 18 months while I was rebuilding my house, and now we're landscaping next week.
Yes.
I wanted to know whether I should get the holes ready and prepped to replant.
And, okay, it's going back into a container?
No, it's going into the ground.
Into the ground, okay. Well,
preparation of the ground is most important. While
sure.
for the next 2 or 3 weeks, get that soil in very, very good condition with lots of organic composted material. Make sure that it's not your homemade compost, it's only half composted, otherwise it'll act like a sponge and you'll have problems. So good compost into the soil, improve that, a little bit of nutrition, slow-release nutrition, and be
yes.
ready to plant. Now, the important thing is when you do take it out of a container, it's important that the roots which are going around the root ball are cut back.
Now, right, I wondered about
there
that.
There may
yep.
be a lot of roots there, and if you do that, if you think about it, if you chop all the surplus roots off and laid them down on the ground, you'd find that there's a large amount of root system there.
Sure.
And that just means that where there was a large amount of roots providing nutrients and moisture to the canopy, it's no longer there.
Yes.
So what are you going to do? You're going to cut back the canopy, aren't you?
Canopy, yep.
That's right. They're most important.
Yep. So cut the canopy to match the approximate size of the root ball, or?
Yes. How big is the canopy? How much?
They've got a... Oh, how big are they? They'd be nearly they'd be half a metre, a bit more than that now.
All right, well, I'll be cutting them. Okay, if you get some good weather, and I think we are going to get some sort of milder weather in that late March and April period, but the ground is warm, so that'll stimulate the plant. So
yeah.
if you're cutting
yeah.
back the root system, cut back the canopy at least maybe by 50%.
Yes.
And cut back the main branches, and what you're getting is more side branches, more smaller side branches, and then
yes.
Don't be afraid to thin out the branches and get the framework that you need.
Get it back to a nice framework for the fruiting. Okay.
That's right, yes.
Good. Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rosie. Great. Harris is in West Hindmarsh with lemon tree with the dreaded gall wasp. Can it be at this time of year?
Yeah, look, it's about a metre and a half tall, and I've just realised now it's all over my tree. Looks like it's really only on the new growth. If I just hack it right down, will it regrow, or do I not need to be that severe with it?
No, the quick answer is yes. You could cut it back quite hard, and I would suggest that the back end of March is an ideal time to do that. Bearing in mind, it's in a container or in the ground?
No, it's in the ground.
In the ground, righto. Well, now would be the time to make sure that it's got plenty of moisture, and I would also be working in a good liquid organic fertiliser now, even during the hot weather. Don't overdo it, but stimulate the root system, so when you do cut it back, it will respond to that very, very, very quickly.
Okay, not a good idea to cut it back now.
Oh, not during hot weather. No.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to sort of expose the branches to sun, and you'll get sunburn. Just the little galls, are they last year's galls, or are you saying these
are... Well, I've only just noticed them now, and I've only just noticed them now. I didn't notice them last year.
Okay.
So I'm assuming they're this year's.
Hop out there when it's cool and take a look at each of the galls. And if you find that there are little pinprick holes in them, that's last year's galls. And whatever was inside there has gone, or else has died. And they're of no problem. It's the new growth, and the new growth would have been infected back in late spring, early summer. And you should find on the new growth, the new stems are starting to develop little galls. And if you're going to do any pruning, autumn is an excellent time to do that. Don't wait too long. If you prune in winter, you'll get new growth, and that new growth will be soft and succulent and will attract the little galls. So prune either very, very early in autumn, or you do it very, very just before the gall wasps are starting to emerge, and that's probably not until October.
Mm.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Harris, for the call. Appreciate it. Andrew is in Happy Valley. You're having trouble propagating your cannas, Andrew.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a bit more about it, Andrew.
Well, it's a canna yellow King Humbert, which has an absolutely beautiful flower on it.
Yes.
And I have a friend who wants it, and it's got seed pods on it, but there's nothing in the pods. Somebody suggested to me that it needs, if it's either a female, it needs a male plant next to it, otherwise it won't produce seeds. Is that right?
Well, no, they should be self-fertile, but you often will find that they're hybrids, and they might flower and they might look like they're setting seeds, but there's nothing in the seeds. The seeds aren't virile. So, I mean, you might be lucky, but you know, it's much easier to dig and divide. Enjoy the flowers. They'll keep on flowering while the ground is nice and warm. And stay tuned, and we give you the soil temperatures. And as we get towards the end of May, you'll probably find that soil temperatures are down around about the 16 or 17 degrees. You're not going to get any new growth. You certainly won't get any flowers at that stage. That's a good time to dig up the whole clump and divide it. Cut it into little pieces, give a piece to your friend, and put the rest back in the garden.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, I thought that was what I was going to have to do. Thanks. You've just confirmed it. But they are beautiful flowers.
Oh, they sound lovely, Andrew. Well, thank you very much for the call, and good luck with the job there, Andrew, in Happy Valley. The text number is 0467 922 891, but the phone number for Talkback Gardening to get straight through to John is 1300 222 891. Coming up, we'll be speaking to Nick Seckham from PIRSA about the latest unfortunate fruit fly outbreak in the suburbs.
Fruit fly has been a major problem in the Riverland. They've been fighting it for quite some time, haven't been able to get on top of it. They will eventually, I'm sure, I hope. But we've been fruit fly free here in Adelaide for a couple of years. Sadly, an outbreak has been discovered, and it's in the northern Salisbury area. And that has big implications because it's very, very close to our fruit and vegetable growing areas, and big implications there. So we'll talk to Nick Seckham about their concern, what they're doing to try and eradicate it, and what we as home gardeners can do to make sure that if there's something happening in our garden, that we report it to the fruit fly people in terms of grubs and maggots and things like that.
Yes, a home gardener's role is very important when it comes to fruit fly, so I'm looking forward to hearing from Nick on that.
Yeah, there are a number of fruits still out there, and they are favourite fruits for fruit fly. So if they've been introduced into Adelaide, the little flies will be looking for something to eat, and let's hope that they don't find it in your garden.
Yes, exactly. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away as well. Talkback Gardening number again, 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening on this Adelaide Cup long weekend. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, gardeners. What are you doing as a gardener today? How do you occupy yourself when the temperatures are going to get to 40 degrees? Presumably you've been out there, you've watered the garden, it's looking okay, and you hope it will continue looking okay. But what about yourself? I reckon a good thing to do would be to retreat into air-conditioned luxury, get out a little notebook, and then start making notes about the summer that's just passed, because very shortly we'll be launching our end of tomato season survey, and it's important, I think, that you do record the kind of things that have happened in terms of weather and varieties and advice that you want to do and maybe change in the garden. And I think writing it all down is very, very useful.
It is indeed. And those notes, I mean, you've been keeping them for decades, and you can map all sorts of changes, but also remind yourself of things that worked and things that haven't worked.
Absolutely. In terms of if you're a keen gardener and you specialise in a particular area, working out, and I find that at the end of each month, I make little notes and saying, looking good in the garden at the moment. And then with the things that are looking good, just a few little comments as to are they as good as last year, or do you need more of this particular one, or perhaps next year you need to look after them a little bit better when they're developing their fruit buds or their flower buds.
That's right, and it's hard to remember that from year to year, but if you have your notes that are contemporaneous, it's
surprising.
It's very helpful.
You go back 3 years. Oh yes, why didn't I do that?
So that's something that you can do in the heat today. Stay out of it if you possibly can. In a moment, we'll be speaking to Nick Seckham of PIRZA, unfortunately, about the latest metropolitan fruit fly outbreak. So he'll bring all the details in a sec. I've also got two ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away this half hour. I'll tell you when to call. And, of course, John is here to take your talkback gardening calls on 1300 222 891, and we love your comments on the text line on 0467 922 891.
So, fruit fly, it's happened here in Adelaide, and it's rather unfortunate. Big problems in the Riverland, and there's a major campaign up there, and let's hope that it's only a matter of time before they do come to grips with that. But to think about fruit fly getting into the fruit and vegetable areas of Adelaide, that would also be very, very disappointing. Nick Seckham, who's in charge of plant health here in South Australia, good morning to you. And why is it you're so concerned about this latest outbreak of fruit fly?
Morning, John. Morning, Deb. Yeah, so unfortunately, we've had to declare an outbreak of Queensland fruit fly at Salisbury North, and that's never good. We've been through this a few times, and we do have to now launch a campaign of organic baiting and fruit collection, and we're confident that'll eradicate the fruit fly at Salisbury North. But the particular difficulty with this one, I think, as you were alluding to earlier, is that it's in those northern suburbs, and when you extend our second line of control, our 15-kilometre suspension area, that then gets us onto the northern Adelaide Plains, where, of course, a lot of Adelaide's fruit and veggies are grown.
We'll come back to movement of the fruit and the veggies from gardens and into those areas in a moment, Nick. You mentioned it's Queensland fruit fly as distinct from Mediterranean fruit fly, which presumably we have usually coming our way. What's the difference and why?
Oh, so they come from different sides of the country. So Queensland fruit fly is an east coast problem. Obviously, it started life. It's a native in Queensland, whereas Mediterranean fruit fly is endemic in Western Australia. Now, your listeners might remember around 3 years ago, we had a really big Mediterranean fruit fly outcome campaign in metropolitan Adelaide. We eradicated that, and as you said, we haven't had any outbreaks now for over 2 years, which is fantastic. But Queensland fruit fly is the same problem that we are dealing with in the Riverland from the east coast. It likes the warmer, more tropical sort of conditions. The heat doesn't mind it at all, whereas the med fly is a little bit more adapted to those cooler climate conditions.
You found 6 flies in a trap. How do they get there?
Yeah, so that's the first thing that we need to start looking at. So we have a trap across metropolitan Adelaide every 400 metres. We've got a grid, and we've got a team of people who go out every fortnight and check those traps. And, yeah, over a period of less than a week, we found 6 traps within a concentrated area at Salisbury North.
So they were spread out rather than all in one trap?
Yeah, they were across 3 different traps. So in that area, if people know the area between sort of Waterloo Corner Road and Salisbury Highway, we've been monitoring that now over the last week, and unfortunately, yes, 6 flies detected, which means there's a problem bubbling away there, and our teams have to get in and find it and eradicate it.
That's right. So does it sound like it's come out of somebody's garden or somebody bringing in fruit maybe and finding it's not to their liking and throwing it out?
Yeah, so we know for sure that this has come in fruit in some way, and the most likely cause for this is that someone has brought in some fruit from interstate and as you say, found something in it they didn't like, some maggots or something, and thrown it out. And obviously we need to ask people not to do that. Fruit fly can only move when people move fruit. So that's likely what's happened here. We'll be looking if we can find a smoking gun in the centre here, but of course now we have to stop it from spreading further. So that's where we ask people not to move any fruit at all out of this area, otherwise we'll have a bigger problem to deal with.
Nick, what to do? You've bought your fruit and you want to enjoy it, but it's been spoilt and it looks like there's something inside, could be a maggot. What to do?
So this is where we ask people to ring our fruit fly hotline. So it's 1300 666 010, and we've got people standing by there, and we can talk through what people are seeing there. As you know, there's other grubs that can get into fruit, but we want to check everyone and make sure that we don't have more fruit fly out there. And if we can get people's help with doing that, checking their backyard fruit, but also anything that they're eating, if there's anything wriggling inside, please ring that 1300 666 010.
Are there particular favourites they're likely to be in?
Oh, they unfortunately, fruit fly like lots of different fruits. Anything soft, and you know, all of our citrus and stone fruits. But this time of year, those summer fruits, and they do unfortunately like tomatoes and capsicums and chilies. So we ask people, look, any soft fruit, please be aware. In the backyard, whatever's growing at the moment, fruit fly are most likely going to like it. They don't get into the cucumbers and the melons, but they do like any of that soft fruit.
We often mention the importance of picking up windfalls. From a fruit fly point of view, what's the likelihood of a fruit fly getting stuck into a windfall?
So this is a really important part of the strategy. So what we find with fruit flies, they most often, if they're around, sting fruit on the tree. But because it then starts to rot the fruit, it will fall prematurely, end up on the ground, and we need to pick that up. Otherwise, it'll continue its life cycle, get into the soil and start a new problem. So you're right. We want people to pick up that windfall fruit and get it into their green waste. We know that goes off for organic treatment, and it'll turn into compost, and that'll solve the problem.
Aha, and many people say, oh, it's windfall, I'll stick it in the compost. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I've tried a lot of composting at home, and I haven't completely mastered it yet, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't quite get hot enough, and unfortunately home composting usually puts fruit fly exactly where it wants to be, and in that nice moist condition. Sometimes it gets warm, but usually not warm enough, so we ask people to put it into the green waste so it can be done professionally to the right standard.
So we're at the stage where it's pretty important that home gardeners come on board in terms of being very observant as to what's happening in their garden.
Yeah, that's right. So, look, we have our own little fruit fly army out there in orange overalls, but every backyard grower can play a role as well. And even if they're not in Salisbury North, we need to keep an eye out. It's a high-risk time of year. Everyone can play a role if they get out there and have a look at their fruit. We ask people to pick, check, collect, and call. Pick your fruit, check it. If there's anything that looks like a bit suspicious, ring that hotline on 1300 666 010, and then we can check it out.
Could you just explain the importance of timing? What happens if you find more?
Yeah, so our release date for quarantine is based on the life cycle of the fruit fly, and we need to make sure we've got every last one, so it's fairly conservative. We look at how long a fruit fly found today might live for. And we know that right now, if we find a fruit fly, we couldn't release quarantine until at least the end of May. But unfortunately, if we find fruit fly in a few weeks' time, in as little as 2 or 3 weeks' time, it's possible that those fruit fly can overwinter. We know that they can survive our winters. And if we find fruit fly towards the end of March, we know they could still be around in the springtime. And so our release date pushes right back. So we need to get onto this really quickly.
Okay. And we're just a quick word on the fact that there are red zones and yellow zones. And that involves the movement of fruit and veggies. If you're in the zone, what can't you do?
So we're really worried, most worried, about backyard fruit. So if you're in a red zone, we ask people, please enjoy your fruit at home. You can still obviously still eat your fruit at home, but please don't move any red zone fruit. That's that 1.5-kilometre hotspot. Outside from that is a 15-kilometre zone, and it is okay to move around within that 15-kilometre yellow zone, but please don't cross the line. We could end up moving fruit and fruit fly where we don't want it.
Could you just describe the area again, the suburb that is of greatest concern?
Yeah, so the outbreak's centred at Salisbury North, and it includes bits of Salisbury North, the southern bits of Edinburgh, Elizabeth South and Salisbury. It's around that Salisbury Highway, Waterloo Corner area. That's the hot spot. But the yellow zone, a 15-kilometre zone, extends north all the way up to sort of the Gawler River. So it does include parts of Anglevale and Virginia. And as you know, there's a lot of particularly tomato and capsicum growers in that area that we are now working with.
Just on the text line, Nick, I've got a couple of questions. Karen asks, is there any official check of private planes coming in and out of Parafield Airport?
So we have been to airports in the past, and people might remember that every now and again we do go out, and we've been in the Adelaide airport at least with the Beagle, the dog that we use with the Commonwealth Government. We know that a little bit of fruit does move along that pathway, and there are signs and bins, and we do random checks, but by far our biggest pathway is by road, and we know that most people travel by road. And unfortunately, we still get people travelling with fruit by road that we have to manage as well.
And this texter says, can the public buy fruit fly traps and help with surveillance?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some that are available at commercial outlets, your local garden store. So that would be fantastic. And if people see anything that they think could be suspicious, again, give us a call.
Okay, well, look, we'll give the details again, Nick. The important thing is to call the fruit fly hotline on 1300 666 010, and as you said, you can get information online if you go to fruitfly, is it .sa.gov.au, Nick?
So it's www.fruitfly.sa.gov.au, but if people just Google PRRSA and fruit fly, it should come up pretty quickly.
Okay, well, let's hope that it all works out, but it's a really big responsibility on home gardeners to do the right thing. So thank you very much for joining us and getting the word out here on Talkback Gardening.
No problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick Seckham, who is a regular contributor to Talkback Gardening, Director of Plant and Invasive Species Biosecurity with PRRSA. And, yeah, keep all of that in mind. Well, we are going back to your general Talkback Gardening calls on 1300 222 891. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away. If you've not won anything from the ABC in the last month, call in now on 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's also with Jill in Strathalbyn. Jill, you've got a blackberry question. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Deb and John. Yes, I have a thornless blackberry. It's been in for 2 years and it's fruited this year very nicely. And it hasn't got many new cones coming up. I believe I have to cut off the old one that has fruited, but there seems to be some plants coming up along where the roots are going out. So are they a normal blackberry plants, or would that be a rootstock?
Oh, no, no, they don't have a rootstock, or most of them don't are not on a rootstock, so they just send up suckers, and what you've got to do is encourage them to send up suckers for replacement, so that if you can imagine that if you want fruit early in the season, it will send up a cane, and that little cane will grow quite tall and have little side branches on it, and eventually we'll have the berries. Now, what normally happens is you get into a program where, let's sort of say there are six canes, and you have three canes. You chop those back at the end of the season. So the fruiting canes, the ones that had fruit on it, you chop those back at ground level. In the meantime, you should also be having new canes growing, and we've still got 6 or 8 or 10 weeks of growing season. So you need to encourage new canes to grow as much as they possibly can between now and the end of the growing season, and they will be the canes that will produce your fruit for next year. And what you need is a balance between the ones which are giving you fruit this year and the new canes coming on for next year.
Yes, so the current one, although it's fruited, it's also put out a lot of canes out the top. In fact, some of them are probably about, 3 metres or so long. So should I be trimming those?
So it's just a great big long cane?
Several.
That's had, and they've already had fruit on them?
Yes.
Right,
the lower part has, but they've put out a huge amount of extra growth. But
all right. It's important. You mentioned before you're getting some suckers, and you need a lot more suckers, and those suckers need to be more vigorous, and you can achieve that by chopping back the ones. Once the fruit, once the plant has, a cane has fruited, you're not going to get any more. There's a little value in having the leaves hang around for a little bit, but you're much better after they've fruited, chopping those canes off and encouraging the new growth for the following season.
Right. Okay, good. That sounds good. Okay, good. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Jill, for calling in on 1300 222 891, and congratulations to Anne in Semaphore and Linda in McLaren Flat, who have won the ABC Gardening Australia magazines this week. We'll have more to give away next week. Let's head to Monash. Richard, I imagine it's pretty warm in Monash today.
Well, it will be by the time we finish. It's pretty nice at the moment in the garden, a little zephyr of a breeze coming through.
Enjoy it while you can. Now, you've got a camellia question for John.
Yes, I partly know the answer. That I have three camellias that the leaves have all curled up, and they've lost their greenness and everything else. And I think it's because the drip lines have insufficient water pressure. Now, my question is, can I revive them? I've tried Z-Sol, can I continue to do anything? Like prune them hard when it's soon or later on?
Interesting. The leaves are curled up. So they're just ordinary green leaves, or are they brown around the edges, or are they actually look like they've been eaten or something's been sucking them?
Nah, they just look brown right throughout.
They look, did you say brown?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think you need to take a look at your watering system to start with. How often, and do you know how much water you're giving each plant? How many litres?
No.
That's right. Okay. And that's the big problem with micro-irrigation is it puts out water, and you're used to putting on a sprinkler, and in the old sprinkler with a hole in the middle of it, if you left the sprinkler on for 15 minutes, you'd probably put out 100 litres of water. They just belched out the water, but you could see it. And you could see, sometimes the damage it did, certainly the waste it did. With a micro-irrigation system, often them, they're coming out at 4 litres an hour. And if you've got one dripper on either side of the plant, and you're putting your plant on, the dripper's on for half an hour, and you think, oh, that's a long time, all you've got is probably 4 litres on a plant that probably needs 20 litres. So you need to say, here's the plant. How many litres of water do I need to give this plant each week? And during hot weather, probably doubling up on that. But look at the plant, look at its water demands, and then work out how you're going to achieve that in terms of your irrigation system. And if you're not sure, you'll find that there are plenty of people. Go to an irrigation specialist. They are wonderful people to talk to. And they will explain to you, righto, what are you trying to water? This is what you need. And there are so many new innovations in terms of the drippers misters and squirters and sprinklers. It's just a wonderful array of material available to home gardeners, and the problem is they don't know about it. And because usually it's the specialist nursery places that have these, and the garden centres, particularly the chain stores, have the same old stuff that they've had for 20 or 30 years, and they haven't realised that there's a lot of innovation out there and it needs to get out to home gardeners. And maybe it's a topic we need to have on Talkback Gardening.
Put it down on your list, John.
Yeah.
Richard?
So, yes. Can I do anything else to revive them at the moment?
Oh, okay. You need to make sure that the area is soaked. So I would be getting a sprinkler if you can, or even better, create a basin around each of your camellias that will hold at least 10 litres of water, and pour in 10 litres of water, and then come back a couple of hours later and put on another 10 litres of water. And I'd be doing that, at least putting on 20 litres of water every week until the end of autumn. Now, in the meantime, the first time you're, perhaps after the first week of watering, I'd be putting on a seaweed product and maybe a half-strength liquid organic fertiliser. Nothing stronger and nothing more than that. But you need to stimulate the soil microbes, and that will do that. And you also need to stimulate the root system, and what I've just suggested will also achieve that.
Okay, right.
Now, hang on the line, Richard, because Jane from Marden has called in on camellias. Jane, good morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Hi there. I have two gorgeous camellias in pots, which I've moved for the summer, and I want to under the front veranda. Now, my question is, I would like to know how to prepare these two 5 foot 1.5 metre camellias for preparation for display towards winter. The best preparation for them, for the winter months.
I think what you're doing is ideal there, Jane. Having your camellias and in containers, putting them in a shady position. If you can find a spot in your garden that doesn't get direct sun, but gets very bright light, that's brilliant. I have two volunteer camellias. They are wonderful. And they are sitting in a nice shady position with lots and lots of light, and they will stay there probably until end of March. And depending on the weather, I'll bring them out and expose them to full sun when they won't get any heat wave conditions or spiky heat, but they'll get lots of sunlight. And that sunlight, well, because right now the camellia plants have got little buds, flower buds, and those little flower buds, they're formed and they've got to develop. And so, and they'll develop through the benefit of direct sunlight. But if you put direct sunlight on them now, they'll get burnt. So you protect them until the hot weather's gone, put them into full sun, and if you can do that before the end of autumn, they've got winter to go through, and probably towards the end of winter, you'll find those little buds that are forming now will have big, fat flower buds on them. And depending on whether you've got an early or mid or late season a camellia, you'll have your display. And at that stage, I've got them, and they sit out somewhere where it's not important in the sun. But once they're flowering, they come in to the courtyard, and they produce a wonderful spectacle.
What about fertilisation, John? Fertiliser.
Go easy. A liquid organic fertiliser is ideal. Or if you don't want to sort of do that on a regular basis, half-strength liquid fertiliser on a monthly basis, I think, would be a good thing to have. Alternatively, use a slow-release fertiliser. And there's a wonderful fertilizer, slow-release fertilizer with Troforte in it. Troforte has little microbes in it. If you can buy that, there's one or two companies that actually sell little sort of kilogram packs of fertilizer for flowers with Troforte. And it makes a very significant difference in terms of that you're not only feeding the plant, you're also feeding the soil. And that is often overlooked.
Mm. Oh, brilliant. Thanks so much, both of you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jane, for the call. We will be doing it all over again next week. Remember, the new time for Talk Back Gardening is from 8 until 9:30. Thank you to Colette of Clearview, who says, bricks in the chook water bowls for the bees. Remember, bees cannot swim, so stones, bricks, quartz, etc. in bird baths will help the bees keep cool too. And you stay cool today. That's very important. Drink lots of water and stay out of the sun if you can possibly avoid it.
And don't forget the value of looking after your plants. A simple little mist two or three times during a hot day will keep them happy and hopefully keep you happy. And until next week, good gardening.